Hey, podcast listeners, it's Joe Pastor, the producer. Are you a fan of our podcast? Well, here's a chance to be part of one of our episodes. We have a podcast episode currently in the works where we plan to delve into process safety professionals' personal stories about why they are passionate about process safety, and we'd love to hear from you. So we want to know, why is process safety important to you? Did learning about a major industry incident impact how you felt about process safety? Or did you or someone you know have a firsthand encounter with a catastrophic event or even a near miss? So what can you do if you'd like to contribute to the episode? You can send us your thoughts via email and we will read them during the episode. Or you can record a short voice message using your phone and send it to podcast@amplifyconsultants.com. We look forward to hearing from you. Thanks and hope you enjoy this week's episode.
Welcome to Amplify Your Process Safety, the podcast that provides the experience and expertise you need when it comes to process safety and risk management. Our hands-on approach will give you the insight needed, whether you're new to industry or process safety, in a role where you interact with aspects of process safety, or an experienced process safety professional. Join us in our mission to protect people, the companies they work for, and the communities where they operate by making process safety knowledge available to all.
Hello, podcast listeners, and welcome back to the Amplify Your Process Safety podcast. This is Rob Bartlett, and I'm joined by Molly Myers. Molly, what are we talking about today?
Hey, good to see you. In today's episode, we're going to be discussing a new investigation report issued by the CSB about an incident at the TPC Group chemical plant in Port Neches, Texas. This incident occurred on November 27th, 2019, but it took the CSB a little while to issue their report.
All right. So what happened? Can you give us some background about the company? What do they do there? And then, of course, information about the incident itself.
All right. So TPC Group has facilities in Lake Charles, Louisiana, Houston, Texas, and Port Neches, Texas, which is not that far from Houston. They make value-added products from petrochemical raw materials. Port Neches facility specifically manufactured butadiene, which is a flammable. It's a building block for a wide range of polymers. And due to the quantity of the flammable materials, they were covered by both OSHA PSM standard and the EPA RMP requirements.
All right. So they are doing dangerous things there.
And
they should have all sorts of programs in place to manage those. However, something happened on November 27th, 2019. So what happened?
Yeah, so a little while before the November 27th date, they had a pump that was having difficulties and they had to take it out of service for maintenance, send it off site. And so the pump had been out of service for 114 days by the time this incident happened. When they took the pump out of service, the inlet and outlet piping to that pump ended up being a dead leg or a dead spot in the piping where there wasn't any flow. And they had a butadiene polymer build up in that idle section of piping. The polymer filled the pipe and essentially expanded enough to generate pressure to the point of rupturing the piping in that area. The pipe ruptured, releasing a flammable butadiene, which, of course, found an ignition source. We all know that you're going to find an ignition source if you've got flammables out of containment.
Yep.
We always
assume that.
Yes, because unfortunately, it often happens. Mm-hmm. So once it ignited, they ended up with massive fire and explosions. In fact, the fires burned for over a month, which would have been
That's a long time for an incident to go on, huh?
It is. They had several distillation towers that were damaged. Some of them just flat out fell over onto all of the adjoining piping and equipment. Mm-hmm. One of them was launched through the air. Fortunately, it did not leave the facility boundaries. But that's not good news when you've got pressure equipment getting launched.
No. What about people?
Yes. So unfortunately, they had two employees, one contractor, and five members of the public who reported injuries. Thankfully, there were no fatalities.
Luckily.
But they also had a mandatory evacuation order that was issued for a 4-mile radius that affected people in 4 nearby towns. Mm-hmm. And they had significant property damage both on site and off site.
I would imagine.
Yes. And additionally, as sometimes happens with these types of incidents, it can really affect the business. And mm-hmm. TPC ended up filing for bankruptcy in 2022.
Wow. That's a big incident. That's a lot of impact both to personnel on site as well as off site. When you start injuring people off site, you know that it's been a particularly bad day. And, you know, I think we were talking about this before, you know, before starting the recording here. You know, we have conversations with folks who manage, you know, companies or who manage facilities who may or may not be PSM covered or RMP covered, but they're thinking that the only reason to do these sorts of things, PHAs and MOCs and training your people and all that stuff is, you know, because we're being told to. But these sorts of incidents can literally kill your company.
Exactly.
So definitely unfortunate that TPC had to file for bankruptcy, but not necessarily surprising. Given what right. the size of what happened there. So, okay. So if I'm looking at that as somebody who may not have a heck of a lot of experience in the chemical industry or certainly in butadiene service, let's take a step back and talk about what is a dead leg and why is it a problem here?
Yeah. So a dead leg is just a piece of pipe that doesn't have normal flow through it. These can be little short sections where you've got a T and a drain valve mm-hmm. that isn't normally open. So that may be only, you know, 4 or 5 inches long. Sometimes they can be longer when somebody has taken a section of piping out of service or a piece of equipment like this with a pump taken out. Mm-hmm. And they can be a little bit longer. In this case, the dead leg on the suction side of the pump was 35 feet long.
That's a big yes. dead leg.
And 16-inch diameter piping. Yeah, so it was quite large.
Yeah.
Many dead legs are not that big, but most they could not. Be. Yeah.
Yep.
So for butadiene in particular, they have a problem with forming a popcorn polymer. That's what it's referred to in the report and in the reference literature for butadiene handling. And when this polymer forms, it basically builds up and expands in volume, kind of like ice forming in water. The solid is a larger volume than the liquid.
Which is why you get bursting pipes if your pipes freeze.
Exactly. And the same thing happened here. This popcorn polymer formed, and as it expanded, it burst the pipe. And that's what led to the ultimate loss of containment. So in this case, the facility had a procedure for running spare pumps periodically so that they would make sure that they put flow in those suction and discharge lines periodically so that they didn't have this polymer build up. But unfortunately, they didn't have any provisions to handle flushing those lines when that spare pump was physically removed and sent off-site for maintenance. It's easy to switch spare pumps when they're both piped up, but when there's no equipment there, no pump to run, they didn't have any provisions for flowing through that line.
So I don't remember whether it said it in the report, maybe you do, but this would actually makes me think about MOCs. But I think you said that this was offline for more than 100 days, right?
Yes.
114 days.
Yes.
That's a long time. mm-hmm. That's a long time. And I mean, regardless, if you're going to run your process without a particular pump in place, you should do an MOC to make sure that you're covering everything. And that would be one place where you might catch this. Was there any indication that there had been an MOC, a temporary MOC done on this?
Not that I saw in the report, no. Yeah. But you're right. That would be an excellent mechanism to ensure that you get the right technical people looking at this. And perhaps they could have put a bypass section of piping in between the suction and discharge of that pump and allowed them to flush it. But they unfortunately did not make any provisions for that.
And that's also why when you do MOCs like that, you want to make them temporary and you don't want them to have a long timeline, because while it took 114 days, when they took it out, they might have thought, oh, we'll get it back in a week. And, you know, suddenly exactly. A week turns into a month, turns into a quarter, and turns into 114 days. So, okay. Yes. So that's one thing. Another thing that comes to mind, of course, is this whole idea of polymer building up in dead legs. If it's known to happen for this material, did their PHA consider this?
Actually, it did. They had a PHA in 2016 that had a recommendation to require out-of-service piping in high-purity butadiene service to be flushed on a monthly basis. This PHA came upon this recommendation because of some earlier near misses that the facility had with this polymer buildup. So right. They were aware of it. They made this recommendation in 2016 when that PHA finished, but unfortunately that recommendation had not been implemented prior to the incident 3 years later in 2019.
That does not seem like promptly addressing the recommendations from your PHA.
Definitely not, especially when you're talking about a procedural type recommendation that's a matter of writing up the procedure and training your personnel on it to roll it out. It doesn't require long lead time equipment to be purchased. It doesn't require approval for capital investments and that sort of thing. Those types of recommendations need to be done very quickly. Days or maybe months, certainly not years out.
Well, especially for a process like this, you know, and obviously I didn't sit down on the PHA, but, you know, what happens if this polymer builds up? Oh, well, we could have a release of butadiene to the area that could very quickly turn into something really bad. That's a high risk scenario there. So your higher risk scenarios, you need to make sure that you're dealing with those quickly. So, okay. All right. So it was in their PHA. So that is interesting. Now there was in the report related to this, there was an issue with remotely operated isolation valves.
Yeah. So if you recall, I mentioned that the fires burned for up to a month. Right. Part of that was due to the fact that they didn't have remote operated isolation valves. Everything was manual. And with the fire raging, it was not safe for somebody to go in and close those isolation valves, those manual valves, and right. limit the flow of flammable materials into the release. So the CSB had highlighted that as a problem and recommended that when you have large inventories of flammable materials, you should have a remote way to isolate that inventory should you have a breach in the line or some other loss of containment.
And this isn't the first time that they've made this recommendation.
Exactly. So fairly recently, there was a report, an incident report from Philadelphia Energy Solutions that the CSB did that was also issued in 2022, where they referenced the fact that these remote shutoff valves would have been helpful. And then also a much earlier one from Formosa Plastics in Point Comfort, Texas, also was a situation where they had a drain valve that was unfortunately broken loose, leading to a leak through their piping, and they were unable to isolate the flow of flammables, and that again burned for quite some time. So This isn't new. It is general practice. There's API references, API 553 on refinery valves and accessories for control and safety instrumented systems that has some recommendations for emergency block valves and has some guidance on when they should be remotely operated versus manual. Also, the CCPS here in the US and as part of AICHE and the Health and Safety Executive over in Europe also provide some guidance on the use of remote operated isolation valves.
Okay, so CSB isn't out on a limb here. They're basically just reiterating that people do what they're already being recommended to do. So
exactly, yes.
Okay, so you got into API, which always brings me into RAGAGAP. For those who don't know what RAGAGAP means, that means recognized and generally accepted good engineering practice. And these are documents which for PSM as well as RMP as well as general duty clause, we're expected to make sure that our equipment is managed in such a way that we keep the bad stuff inside and don't let it out. And the Ragged Gap documents are what we do. So there was an issue here related to this butadiene. Can you get into that a little bit?
Yeah, so some of the Ragged Gap standards that people are very familiar with are these API standards and ASME and NFPA and so forth, and those are consensus standards. There's another category of Ragged Gap standards called non-consensus Ragged Gap documents, and in this case, there was one published by a section of the American Chemistry Council that was called the Butadiene Product Stewardship Guidance Manual. So this is not a consensus standard that follows the same sort of multi-organizational group put together that follows certain review and comment periods and update frequencies and so forth. But it is a good reference manual that provides a lot of relevant safety information, in this case, for manufacturers working with butadiene. And it did talk about this popcorn polymer and had some recommendations about avoiding dead lags. Unfortunately, it didn't really have a lot of detail on the hazards associated with the buildup of this popcorn polymer. So just mentioning, oh yeah, you should flush any idle piping is one thing, but to explain to somebody, okay, if you don't do this, this polymer could build up, you could rupture your piping, you could have a release, you could have a fire that burns for a month, you could have something that puts you into bankruptcy.
You could have something that launches your distillation column.
Yes. So these non-consensus standards are very valuable. If one of them applies to your industry, you should definitely take advantage of that information. And the CSB had some recommendations for the American Chemistry Council to upgrade this document and include a little bit more background and technical information on this popcorn polymer and the hazards that it presents.
Yeah, in a previous life, many, many, many moons ago, I was actually part of a group that dealt with developing these sorts of industry like guidance manuals for the safe handling of methyl methacrylate. And two things. First off, it's a fantastic document because it actually was put together by all of the primary producers of methyl methacrylate at the time. It was really the best practices from the combined group of what, you know, what's the best way to make sure that you don't have fires or runaway polymerization with MMA. So it was fantastic. And the other piece of that is that it was constantly being updated. I mean, it was, you know, there was either a revision coming out or a revision being worked on pretty much all the time. So definitely if you have those in your industry, whether it's butadiene or MMA or others, definitely worthwhile to have those in your knowledge base to make sure that you're doing what you should be doing.
Right. And they are considered Ragged Gap. So if there is one that applies to your industry and you're covered by PSM or RMP, you really do need to be aware of that and follow the guidance provided in those documents.
Absolutely. So were there other contributing factors for the incident here?
Yes, there was one that the report mentioned that caught my eye, and that was the fact that they had been having a lot of operational upsets due to this popcorn polymer blocking production lines and hindering functionality of instruments within the unit for a few weeks leading up to the incident. They kept trying to figure out what was causing the polymer buildup and how to get rid of it. And they were putting in filters and trying to filter this out. And in fact, they had even discussed doing an unscheduled shutdown for extensive cleaning to get this polymer out of the system so that it didn't continue to cause operational problems. Unfortunately, they decided that they were limping along okay, and they deferred that shutdown until 2020. However, this incident happened at the end of 2019 before they got to that shutdown.
Yeah.
So if your operating facility is experiencing repeated upsets and problems, it's best that you go ahead and look into the root cause of those and address them in a timely fashion and don't just keep putting off those shutdowns. I know that It's costly to do unplanned shutdowns. Management doesn't like that. It upsets the business plans and so forth. But unfortunately, when you have something like this that could lead to a significant process safety incident like they had, they would have been far better off having taken the hit financially to shut down early, clean it
out,
as opposed to having this incident that put them into bankruptcy.
Right. Right. Often when we talk about, I mean, and in this case, you know, we'll be the first ones to say this, it's very easy to play Monday morning quarterback. But one of the things that we should be, when we have those discussions, hey, we have this recurring issue, should we just shut down, bite the bullet and do a cleaning or fix it or, you know, whatever, install this new equipment. One of the parts of that discussion should be, is deferring this going to cause any potential safety issue? Now, in this case, you had a pump that was taken out of service. Who knows, outside of the maintenance folks and maybe, you know, the operations folks, who knows who else knew about that? So it's possible that there was a disconnect and maybe the folks making the decision about a shutdown were fully looking at it from a productivity standpoint. Oh, we have these orders on the books, and if we just can get to January, then things will slow down. We'll do it then. They may not have been aware of the hazard of basically this ticking time bomb that was going on in this dead leg. So, you know, for those of you out there that have, you know, discussions like that, make sure you're always thinking, like, is there anything in the process, any way in the process that this could cause a safety risk? And if the answer to that question is yes, make sure that you're dealing with those risks as part of your plan for, you know, for either shutting down or deferring.
Right.
Okay, so we've talked about TPC. We've talked about butadiene. Most of the companies out there don't deal with butadiene. So what types of companies could be at risk for something like this happening?
Yeah, so this specific incident was very unique to the butadiene industry, and the recommendations from the CSB are specific to TPC Group and the American Chemistry Council for butadiene handling. So those types of recommendations aren't going to be very widely applicable to other companies and industries.
Right.
However, some of the information about dead legs is common among industries. You can have problems with dead legs even if you're not handling butadiene. For instance, if you get water into a dead leg for whatever reason, whether it's a water line or it is some other process line that could have some water condensing and then it falls down into a low point, which is often a dead leg, especially in colder climates, those can freeze and create the same problem that these folks had at TPC, where the ice can expand and break your piping and lead to a loss of containment. So everyone should be cognizant of dead legs in their facility. Some facilities have specific policies around reviewing dead legs and doing field walkthroughs to identify dead legs and address them. If you don't, you might want to consider that, especially if you're in a colder climate where freezing could be an issue.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yep.
I think one of the other takeaways, and we talked about it before, and one of the other takeaways, of course, is related to PHA recommendations. We've got to promptly address those. And if for some reason you can't promptly address them, in this case, it was a procedural change. And Molly, as you were saying, you know, if you've got to get capital, you got to get engineering, it can take a long time. What I see happen a lot that always concerns me that I bring up is, hey, we've got this, PHA team has identified this high risk situation. Okay, fine. Here's what our recommendation is to, you know, change the process in such a way that it'll take us 2 or 3 years to do. So in the meantime, are we operating at that elevated risk? Or maybe we should consider doing, while we're waiting for that to happen, is there something shorter term that we can do to manage that risk a little bit lower?
Right. So sometimes promptly, there might be a procedural, you know, oversight that happens on a more frequent basis or a more frequent inspections and things of that sort as an interim safety measure.
Something that you wouldn't want to do all the time from here on out, but certainly short term, it is worthwhile to reduce the risk of that happening.
Right. Right.
So what else do you think companies can learn?
One other thing is, if you are handling flammables, definitely pay attention to where you have large inventories and whether you need to have some remote operated isolation valves to help manage that risk. Should you have the worst case happen and you lose containment, you can at least limit the quantity that goes to feed the fire or that vapor cloud or whatever is building outside of your piping when you've lost containment.
Yeah, if you can shut that down and minimize, I mean, obviously this one was a little excessive going on for multiple weeks, but certainly anything you can do to reduce the amount of fuel going into that situation, or if it were toxic, right, the amount of toxics that are being released. I mean, that certainly is going to be what you want to do.
Right.
Exactly. All right. Anything else?
No, I think that's about it. So in closing, if you have a comment about this week's episode or have an idea for a future episode or question about anything process safety related, we'd love to hear from you. Send us a voicemail using the link in our episode description or shoot an email to us at podcast@amplifyconsultants.com.
So you may notice that we've started reviewing some of these CSB incident investigations in our podcasts. I don't know how many by the time this comes out. I don't know how many we will have put out before this. But the fact is that we appreciate the excellent work that the CSB does in investigating these process safety incidents and providing informative reports and oftentimes videos about these incidents. These videos, you know, we've been watching these videos for years and years, and they're always a valuable tool for training and to get people to understand just how bad things can be. So here at Amplify Process Safety, we're doing our part to help ensure that this information gets out there. Not everybody has time to read through a full report or even to remember to go to the CSB website to review videos. So we hope that this is something that you listeners will find value in. And obviously, we do recommend that you go to the CSB website to learn more about all these incidents that we cover. And that is at csb.gov. And finally, our goal here at Amplify Process Safety is to save lives by partnering with companies that handle highly hazardous chemicals to create world-class process safety systems, as it's our firm belief that these systems will help prevent catastrophic incidents like fire, explosions, and toxic releases. Please don't hesitate to reach out to us if we can help you or your company on your process safety journey. And Molly, thank you for all your work on this podcast.
Thank you, Rob, and thank you, listeners, for your time and attention. And until next time, be safe out there.
We appreciate you joining us for this episode of Amplify Your Process Safety. Head to our website, amplifyconsultants.com, to find our show notes and other resources. Thank you for joining us in our mission to ultimately save lives by advancing process safety right here on Amplify Your Process Safety. Until next time.